Welcome back to a very special episode of the Full Moon Show. It's been a while. My sincerest apologies for it being a while, because we've been kind of busy working on a lot of new stuff, and we haven't had much to talk about. But we do today. My name is James Stevenson. I'm the community lead and host of the Full Moon Show. I'm here with a great group of folks. To my left, I have our assistant community manager, brand new, second week on the job. You may remember him from last year where we got him drunk on his 21st birthday and let him on a podcast. It's a terrible decision. Brandon Winfrey.
How's it going, guys?
Directly across from me is, I guess I should have asked what your title is. You're a designer?
Technically, I am an associate designer.
Associate designer. Rowan is here with us.
Indeed. Hello.
And the big honcho in the room, Insomniac's Chief Creative Officer, Brian Hastings, joins us today as well.
Hey there.
And we're here today because we just announced our game on Facebook called Outernauts. And the three gentlemen in this room, Brandon, Rowan, and Brian, are all working daily on Outernauts. You'll see Brandon on the Facebook page and in our forums talking to folks. Rowan's designing levels and quests and encounters. And Brian is sort of the ringmaster of them all on this game. So, guys, first things first, I want to get out of the way. Way back when we announced it as sort of this Insomniac Click branch of the company. But one of the first things that we wanted to get out there is we're not using that anymore. And I thought maybe you guys could talk to some of the reasonings behind the fact that we've sort of dropped that name and it's just a game on Facebook from Insomniac Games.
You know, I can't even remember why we did it in the first place. It's been a while. I think we wanted to kind of separate what we were doing from what the rest of the company was doing because it was really, really different, right? But really, I guess in the end, what we're doing really isn't that different in hindsight. I mean, we're trying to make great games, and you know, we're just making games that are playable in browser as opposed to games that are playable on the console. But you know, fundamentally, besides that, you know, it's very similar to everything else we do. So we didn't want to have that division or even that sense of division within the company.
So talk to me about Outernauts. If people have just seen this podcast pop up on their in their subscription on iTunes, or maybe they haven't gone on and read much about it yet. Explain Outernauts to them.
So Outernauts is it's kind of a deep story-driven RPG about collecting and training and battling exotic alien beasts and taming a wild galaxy.
Good messaging.
Thanks,
You've been trained.
I have been trained.
Solid.
I was about to say, it's like this game where you do stuff.
You know, you go around and say hi to people.
I need to be media trained, man.
I've been practicing that one in the shower, so.
Paid off.
I think Rowan, we were showing Rowan at Tim Tebow's press conference when he went to the New York Jets as an example of someone who is well media trained. And it was really funny because I think Rowan might have been the only person who didn't know who Tim Tebow was.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I didn't know who Tim Tebow was.
Oh my gosh. He's been working so hard on this game.
Dude, I don't follow football, so I think that's probably the biggest.
So you said something interesting, like a real RPG on Facebook.
Right.
So talk to people, like what are the sort of things you're going to be doing while you play Outernauts? What makes it a real RPG? Like what are those kind of core elements that we really wanted to bring into the game to make it feel like you're actually playing an RPG?
I think there's a real sense of character and like player progression throughout the game. So you've got, you know, tons of beasts that you're training and evolving and you've got, you know, levels for your player and you've got quests that you're completing. You've got a deep, rich world full of NPCs to talk to and get quests from. And there's a real kind of progressive storyline throughout the game. And I think a lot of that stuff you're starting to see on Facebook, but it's not as prevalent as I think we'd all like it to be.
Well, beyond that, just the sheer amount of content in the game is just enormous. I mean, the number of levels we have and the size of the levels, just the amount of exploring, the amount of quests, the amount of content, the amount of everything is just vastly beyond, I think, anything I've played so far on Facebook. I haven't played everything, but I've played a lot of things, and it goes far beyond what I've played so far.
And I think it's pretty fair to say this is the biggest total experience we've ever created as a company.
It is. It takes far longer to complete it, and this is starting to hurt us right now, just how long it takes to test the test through all the content in the game.
Well, I mean, it literally is to the point where a tester would have a hard time like cheating all the way through it in just a normal work week. Like, it would be very hard for someone to play through the entire game.
Yeah, three people playing full time can't complete it in a week right now, splitting it up.
That's insane.
It's crazy.
I mean, that tells you how big this game is. It's bigger than any Ratchet game we've ever made. It's bigger than any Resistance game. It has multiplayer elements where you can still challenge your friends and kind of do the asynchronous, you know, multiplayer that way. This is enormous. Like, I've been playing it now for probably close to a month from when we sort of got into our closed beta state and we were trying to get it ready. And I'm maybe halfway through, like, about at that point, and I think it's going to get harder, so probably not really. It's nuts. There's a ton of content here. When this was the idea, when you knew this Outer Knots was the idea, what were those moments like? How did you get to that point where you kind of realized that this was going to be what we were going to be working on, and how did that kind of get the ball rolling? When did it really start to snowball?
It's been a lot of steps along the way. I mean, because, you know, we started out with Gold Flamingo, the casino game, which, you know, lasted a couple months before we abandoned it. And this was – and then I was kind of shifting into, like, sort of a space exploration, kind of one of those 4X games of, you know, conquering and exploring. But it was going to be more sci-fi, and you know, gradually the genre shifted, and I guess it was a pretty quick shift. The genre shifted. It was like, you know, it would be more fun. Like, initially, it was more like World of Warcraft, I guess. You were out there, you'd battle a monster, you know, and just sort of, you know, click it with a sword until it died. And that was, it was like, all right, but it's still, it felt like it was missing something. I didn't have the real sense of progression that I wanted, that I wanted to make it satisfying. And that's when, that's when I really started trying to find a way to that you're constantly progressing in multiple ways, in different ways all the time. So we have these things called progression vectors. So the goal in an RPG, a really good one, is you're always progressing no matter what you're doing. You're progressing in like 10 different ways at once. And when we just kind of shifted the genre to be more about monster combat, that's when suddenly you're just the sense of progression just leapfrogged beyond what we were doing before, and it was just so much more, I guess, satisfying in the design.
Well, how many different ways are there to progress? What different things can you progress? Because I'm trying to count in my head.
I mean, it's
a lot of stuff.
There's, I mean, you have a player level.
Right? So yeah,
all of your creatures have a level.
Yeah, their abilities have levels. Yeah.
And then you can still expand your home world, and you can customize your home world, build a lot of things on that.
Complete quest chains.
You can craft it, and you can learn you know, recipes to craft new things. You have a lot of different currencies and collectibles as well. You have your battle ranking and your total pet value.
And there's leaderboards as well.
Exactly, yeah.
So you can compare. So not only can you just level up against the game, you can actually go and see how you are against your friends or everyone or the top people around.
And there's unlocking new planets, and then there's unlocking new quests and quest progression.
And there's a full story here. Not just to say this is just an RPG with – talk to me about kind of writing the story. And, I mean, you guys have put a lot of funny dialogue in there. And what's kind of been your focus as you've been working on, you know, really giving this game the character that it has?
I think – making your characters like kind of relatable and funny is like a big thing for this. It keeps people interested a lot easier, I think, and a lot longer than trying to do something super serious. So we've got, you know, our story has kind of serious overtones to it, but a lot of the dialogue in it definitely has the kind of insomniac wit or charm to it, I think.
Yeah. That was actually an aha moment for me. It's like when I started playing the game like a month ago, is I went to the first guy and he said something that literally made me laugh out loud. And I was like, all right, we're on to something here.
Right on track.
Yeah, it's awesome. It was the first line. I was like, yes.
I think another interesting Insomniac trademark that I see, especially in the creature design, is the art style. And can you talk about how you kind of found that art style? Because this wasn't always this way. I think there was a lot of iteration that went into the art process to making the game look the way it does.
We did iterate a lot of times. I mean, it's been kind of a a brainstorming and an iteration process between like Tony Mora, who's a lead artist on it, and David Coughlin, who's is doing a lot of the their creature creation. And David Gerton in North Carolina, and as well as Greg Baldwin, kind of got together and went back and forth on a lot of styles. And Dave Gerton's influence, I think, especially, kind of transformed the look from where we originally were to kind of where they are now. And it's got that he's got a very unique line. You know, you definitely recognize his stuff when you see it. And a lot of his sort of 50s sci-fi influences and a lot of his reference art had a big impact on the direction we went. I think the kind of his take on 50s sci-fi art gives it, combined with like Sing Ji's art style, really give it a unique look that it just isn't really out there. You know, it's not like anything else that's is out there anywhere, not just on Facebook, but anywhere. It's got a really kind of unique feel to it.
Yeah, I think you definitely can pick up on Dave's influences in there. Like, he's so, if you've played Ratchet and Clank over the years, I think you definitely see some of the, I don't know, DNA that's definitely Insomniac DNA of that art style has transported itself over and is definitely apparent. But I do think it's probably one of the more striking games that I've played on Facebook in terms of just sheer art style, and really beautiful, especially pop it in full screen on a nice big monitor, and it's just absolutely gorgeous.
Oh yeah.
Really, really pretty.
It looks
game.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
So coming from having developed Spyro and Ratchet & Clank, and Rowan, you were on Resistance as an intern.
Mm-hmm.
How has this whole process been different for you, Brian, from working on all of Insomniac's console games up to this point to now creating this? Like, what have you, you know, what surprised you? What didn't surprise you? What's the same? What's different? Like,
it's like everything is different. I mean, the surprising part was just how much work it took. I had no idea it was going to be. I mean, from the beginning, I've been saying, okay, we're doing the depth of a console game on Facebook, right? So that's been the mission from the start. And I should have known right there, okay, that means you're doing a lot of work, right? Because you're creating the depth of a console game. There's no shortcuts to do that. So, but still, somehow I managed to be constantly surprised by just how much work it takes. There's just a lot of unknowns, and I didn't know the unknowns. So going in, I was just like constant surprise of just like all the things that we needed to do. Just to, you know, first of all, just to get it running properly, all the server stuff, all the back end stuff that you don't really think about, like, you know, having not done one of these before. But it's like every day it would be like a series of new things. It'd be like, oh, wait, we didn't really think of that whole giant system that needs to be coded. So it's been a massive amount of programming that, I guess I kind of thought we sort of like, okay, the systems are done, you know, at this point, and then it'd be like, okay, now I can just sort of focus on design or whatever, and tuning and stuff like that. And there really hasn't been a day that I haven't been programming. There's no like, you know, end goal where like, okay, now it's done, and now we can just kind of move on to like, you know, the you know, design part of it or something. You know, they all happen all the time. The design, the art, the programming, and just kind of. It's a massive undertaking.
Well, you talk about multiple progression vectors. You've got like all of these things happening at the same time. I think one of the biggest things for me actually was realizing how, on the design side, how similar stuff ended up being more similar than I was expecting, because I'd never worked. I mean, none of us ever worked, or not none of us, but Brian and I haven't worked on a Facebook game before this. And, I was expecting everything I kind of knew to be thrown out the window, but a lot of what making a kind of game, how you make a game fun isn't really going to change, I think, a lot of times from platform to platform. So that was something for me that surprised me, I guess, was that I could use a lot of knowledge that I had already stored up and kind of apply that towards a kind of different game.
Do you still find yourself being surprised, even though we're in the middle of closed beta and getting close to pushing this thing out there? Do you still find those, oh my God, I didn't even think we'd have to do something like that moments?
It's no longer every day, but yeah.
Yeah, still present.
I mean, I'm hoping like the really giant ones are kind of out of the way. I mean, the giant ones, like we were going to use a sort of a third party stats system, but it turned out the stats like we wanted. There's just no way to store them with the system, because with the number of like, I guess pieces of data that needed to be stored with every event was like, you know, sometimes it was as high as 9 or it got up to like 16 on one of them. And the one we wanted to use, I think it allowed you to store two unique ones. So anyway, it just ended up being like, okay, like now when we were already like over scheduled, it's like now write a stat system, you know? So there've been moments like that. A few of those were just like, oh my God, and there's no way to get this done. There's no way to possibly add that to the schedule.
Has it been interesting for you programming again on an Insomniac game? Because for a while there, you were definitely, you know, a little more creative focused, a lot more writing and creative directing in the case of Deadlocked. And you're still definitely kind of creative directing in a lot of ways, but you've been very hands-on on the programming side, which is kind of a return to your...
It was a little different at first, because, I mean, since, I guess, Ratchet 3 was the last one I programmed on, and so... it took a while to sort of get back into the swing of that, but I mean, after I guess the first couple of months, it was like, you know, sort of shook the rust off, and then it was like, yeah, you know, I guess I didn't really miss it, you know, when I wasn't doing it, but now that I'm back, it's I don't really want to stop, because it is kind of nice, like, okay, it's like, okay, we need this feature in. I'll just go do it, you know, as opposed to having to go find someone and say, okay, let's fit this into the schedule. Exactly. Yeah.
That's really cool. What's your guys' favorite part of the game? That's a two part question. I'll ask you that. What's your favorite part of the game right now? What thing are you most proud of so far?
I think the combat, I mean, I think the layers and the depth of the combat is really kind of refreshing and exciting. I mean, and some of the things I guess I'm most excited about right now are the things that like that haven't gotten in yet because they're new, because they're like because we know they're going in, people don't really know about them yet. So
then there's still more to come. Like it, I mean, I still will come back to Rowan on that question, but like just because you launched the game isn't the end of it. There's many things planned to continue coming out.
Right, and essentially that is the most exciting thing is in this kind of game. There's something new every week, right? So it's completely different from like the kind of game we've made for like, you know, 18 year history is like, you know, you ship it, it goes gold and like you're done and like you're on to the next thing. And this one, like it's ever growing. It's like you're constantly improving it and constantly adding new things. And that's what I think is maybe the coolest thing about, you know, online browser games, Facebook games in general, is that like it doesn't get old because one, like there's a massive amount of content, but two, like every week there's something new. Every week there's like a new thing to try out. That's, and the things that we kind of have on our list to add are super exciting.
What about you, Rowan? What's your favorite thing so far? The thing you're most proud of?
I think honestly, I'd have to mimic the combat thing. I think it's really refreshing for me to kind of see our game having a real kind of core gameplay aspect, in the sense that there's real strategy and kind of depth to the core of our game that I think is going to make Outer Knots a game that you can like keep playing all the time and not get too, you know, fed up with it. You know, it's like Facebook games for me tend to have a certain kind of lifespan. Where I kind of, you know, I'll play for a month or two and eventually peter out. And that's because I feel like I don't have that kind of core hook of some sort of gameplay at the center that's always pulling me back. And I think
it's kind of like most of them, you're just doing the same thing every time you log in. Yeah. And that's what I think is really different here. Like if you look at all the level content that you and Daniel and Jack made, I mean, you guys have awesome puzzles. There's so many different areas to explore. It's like you're constantly doing something new and seeing something cool. Yeah. I think that's so different.
That's one of the things, too. I think especially the puzzles get really kind of interesting when you get to probably like the third sector. So the game's sort of broken up into chapters, if you will. And you get into sort of the third chapter and the puzzles start to become very, I mean, basically handheld console level puzzles once you've kind of gotten past the introductory phase, where you're trying to figure out which order do I have to flip a certain switch and so I can make it across and get this thing that I need or find this creature that I'm or beast I'm trying to get to and capture it. I think it's really actually pretty fascinating, and it sort of feels like some of those good 16-bit era RPG dungeons and things like that that come across, you know, even just, and they're not even necessarily the dungeons in the game, but just, you know, the areas in the game that you're patrolling. So I think that's been a really, really big success, actually.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I think we knowingly like tried to space out a lot of that stuff so that we're kind of introduced that over a period of time. You know, we don't want to like hit you with a doozy at the beginning of the game and, you know, have people be like, I can't do this puzzle, I'm gonna quit, you know? So like I think that was something that we really wanted to ramp up gradually, and it's cool to hear that that's working out.
Yeah, and I think if you're listening to the show, you're probably more of a hardcore gamer. So I definitely think, you know, there's a lot of really good content throughout the course of the game, but don't, and I think even then, I don't know, Brandon, you can probably speak to this too. Like, I think the beginning of the game is a lot of fun, but when you start to see that stuff in a Facebook game, when you get a little bit into it, it's like, oh my God, wow, this is like, this actually feels like a, you know, a game I'd be playing on my DS or even on my, you know, on my PlayStation 3, and that's kind of cool in a lot of ways.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's one thing I think it does really well is progression. Like, everything hits at the exact right time. Like, you see, you know, hints of puzzles, and then all of a sudden you have them, and you're just like, oh, I understand. I mean, it sets it up all really well. So by the time you are in the third world, you have a handle on all the game systems, and then you're ready to kind of take on new things, harder enemies, harder puzzles.
So. Yeah, I think a bad connotation of games on Facebook that I usually have is kind of what you see is what you get within like the kind of first couple times playing it. You kind of know what you're going to be getting for the rest of the time that you play it, and I think that's not the case with our game. I think it really has a progression to it, and you really do discover new things as you're playing.
So as we kind of continue this closed beta phase that we're in right now, what are sort of the things you're trying to tune? What are the things you're trying to get right before we kind of open this up to the masses in the next, you know, sometime this summer?
There've been a lot of technical challenges. I mean, every day is like, you know, a new technical issue. So we've just recently, I guess, kind of refined our whole build pipeline. You know, it goes in stages. You know, you go from the develop environment to like the quality assurance environment to the live environment. And that whole system has taken it's gone in fairly recently. It's taken a lot of, you know, updates and tweaks. And so we're sort of getting the kinks out. It's you know, there's. It's a really different world, but just having like a constantly live server where you can't let it break ever, it's a challenge, you know, because like it's weird just the sheer millions of ways that something can break, and you can't let any of them happen. There's
a lot of different combinations of the way things can happen in this game.
Yeah. So.
Because it's, yeah. I guess that's one of the things that is the coolest about it, because it's live, because everybody in the world is playing it all at the same time. That's, you know, you have live, well, you have PvP, you can play anyone, the leaderboards are all live, you're seeing people from around the world that you're battling. So that's one of the coolest things, but it's also one of the scariest parts. It's like, anyone in the world needs to be able to access it, you know, on whatever browser they're using and whatever computer they're using, whether it's a, you know, laptop or whatever, you know, whatever their IP is, whatever their, you know, firewall situation, all it has to just work all the time forever.
Till the end of time.
Till the end of time. And that's, you know, it's been a challenge for all of us.
I feel like there's even still stuff going in right now too. I mean, I know like we're, you won't really see the UI in any of the screenshots because there's a whole updated UI that's about to go into the game right now. And that's sort of terrifying in some ways, too, from a development perspective, like changing all of your buttons that can break every... I mean, that's a big deal.
Yeah, and in theory, it's plug and play. You know, and you just you know, keep all the same names and it just drops in, but nothing ever actually works that way. But I think G and Will are mainly in charge of that, and they're doing a really good job. They work really well together and making it as close to plug and play as you can. It's like, because it's a massive change that they're doing right now to the UI, and it looks really cool. It looks amazing.
It's a really nice big upgrade.
It's a nice slick new look, but yeah, it's basically changing every button in the game at once.
Yeah, it's pretty insane.
Rowan, one of the things that sort of is interesting, because we've talked about this, you know, wanting to build a game with sort of that depth that'll definitely get people, you know, we want to appeal to people to play Facebook games. We also want to get people that maybe haven't played a Facebook game because maybe they've tried them and it wasn't for them. They haven't found the one they really like yet.
Sure.
How do you tune a game difficulty-wise to deal with people that maybe, you know, are really into RPGs versus, you know, maybe someone who's coming from a game that's on Facebook now that doesn't really have a lot of that depth? Maybe they're just harvesting things and now they're dealing with a battle mechanic. So what's kind of been your philosophy in dealing with those two very, you know, separate players that we both want to be able to have a really good time and enjoy the game together.
Yeah, I think it, a lot of it comes down to just making sure you have a kind of good ramp at the beginning and making sure that, you know, we're not throwing you in like head first. You know, it's not like Demon Souls on Facebook or anything. I think that's one thing that we're trying to get right and constantly tuning right now in closed beta, which, you know, kind of goes off your last question, but it's like making sure all the beasts of the, you know, that you're fighting are kind of the right levels so that you're not getting too, you know, frustrated or too stuck, but at the same time providing you challenges every so often so that you actually, you know, start to learn about different parts of the game and, you know, learn about how to use different beast types and that kind of thing. So, it's about providing the right challenge at the right time, probably. So making sure there's always a place you can go in every kind of area where, you know, if you're not high enough level, you can grind a little bit, or, you know, if you're not, or, you know, if you're too high level, you know, you can kind of breeze past some of those challenges. So I think it's a pretty, you know, I think it's just about the right challenge at the right time.
Yeah, and I'm in like every galaxy too. I mean, there's a tournament type level, and those tournament-esque areas, like they like towards the top, they get really really tough. And you know, you don't have to do those if you want to. Some quest lines require that, but like, just yeah, if you want to go to the very top of that, you're gonna have to make sure that your beast is, you know, more properly trained than someone who just, you know, wants to stick to the main course.
Well, and I think there's a lot of player control too, and how difficult you make the game for yourself. You know, you could level one beast up so powerful that you can blaze through a lot of stuff, or you can try and focus on equally leveling your beasts and trying to keep roughly with the same, maybe a level or two ahead, but, you know, so that you level up a bunch of your beasts together, and it kind of will depend on how players want to play it. If you stick with one, maybe you're going to find an easier time with that one, but if he somehow gets knocked out by a... I almost said knocked up. I don't know why. If he somehow gets... There's no breeding.
There'll be a mini game later.
If he gets knocked out, though, like, say you have, you know, I like, you know, I've got my fire cat Puma. What is he now? Puma Ferno? He's Puma Flare to start. I don't even remember his name.
We call him Pumferno or Pumferno or something.
Pumferno, yeah. So but if he runs into someone who's like water type and wipes him out in one, right. You know, it's like, oh crap, now I have like a couple much lesser creatures that suddenly have to deal with a tough fight. And Tim was playing actually earlier, and he was carting around like a little level 7 creature that he was trying to get leveled up, and it actually got down to it, and then he was like trying to beat like a creature 20 levels higher than him because it only had like 10 hit points left, and he just managed to get like 2 like 5-point hits on it. He was like, yes, he's like celebrating because he's about to get wiped out, but it totally worked out for him. So there's definitely kind of, I think, an interesting aspect that you can sort of make the game if you want to have more of a challenge. Some of that's up to you and how you, what beasts you choose to take with you and how you choose to level your beasts,
right? And I will say a lot of the, I think a good portion of the game focuses on 2v2 combat. So you have like 2 of your beasts out there at the same time.
And even 3v3 as well. Yeah. So you'll see situations where, you know, if you're only leveling one beast, your other two beasts are going to come into that fight. And now it may turn into 3-on-1 very quickly if they take out your other two.
And the boss fights. It's really hard to get past one of the bosses, like if you're just focusing on one beast. But yeah, what you guys are hitting on, I mean, that's basically been the core to what we've been trying to do from the start, is like, let's make a game on Facebook that's actually challenging to play, because that's what I always felt like was missing. Like, going back to like the original blog, it's like, you know, a lot of these games aren't games or activities, you know, they're toolboxes, but there's no problem. And, you know, so basically a game, in my definition, the simplest possible explanation or definition of what a game is a toolbox and a problem to solve. But like, we have all these toolboxes out there where it's like, yeah, you're farming crops, but to what goal? You know, you're not trying to solve a problem. And if you're not trying to solve a problem, it's not really a game. So, there's just so many games out there which are like, it's cool, you can keep on clicking this and you can keep on getting a sense of like progression, but really, like, you're just leveling up. You know, it's basically just cow clickers, like, you know, the distilled version of it. But, you know, we just having a game that's challenging in the traditional sense, that's a real game in that sense, is basically what I've been trying to do from the start.
So I know people will go back to your original blog, and we'll probably look at some of the comments made on there. There's definitely, you know, some things that, you know, we definitely use some things that games on Facebook use in terms of there are places where you will need friends. You have an energy, you have a certain amount of energy to do things with. So there's some certain tropes which we've adopted. And some of those I think you were hoping not to adopt originally, that you had talked about social, not having you define friends just to find friends. Right. Can you talk about how some of those philosophies had to change slightly or accommodate some of these things that are common and important to a game on Facebook's success?
Yeah. Well, it's been a learning experience for me in that I had to come to grips with not everything Zynga does is evil necessarily. Maybe I don't like a lot of the mechanics that they tend to use, but some things using friends in a game, some things are, well, one, are kind of necessary to allow your game to survive in the world of Facebook to be viral. We are giving it away for free. So, somehow in order to pay for the server costs and the development, you do have to make money in the end. And so it's you can't just give it away for free. It has to be some ways that, there has to be some form of microtransactions. And I'm not against that, but I guess the difference is I don't want it to be a game that feels like they're forcing you to be a viral marketer, right? In a lot of the games that I had played, that's what it felt like. It felt like here's a completely arbitrary point where I just need to invite five friends because you told me to, and that's what I hated, and because I hadn't done anything fun in the game yet, and now you're telling me go spread the word, first make me enjoy it, and then I'll go spread the word. And I have played a couple games. I mean, I've been pretty addicted to Backyard Monsters, and that one, I'll go and invite friends because you know what? I'm enjoying your game, and I have no problem with that. So for us, it was, I guess especially for me, it was coming to terms with, okay, it's not like inviting friends is inherently evil, but I want to make it something where first you're going to enjoy the game, and then we're going to have ways to interact with your friends, which you can both enjoy. Instead of just saying invite friends, it's you can duel your friends, and then you can you can beat them and their pets, and then you can share that and share the results of that. So that form of interaction I feel like is more satisfying because you're doing something that's challenging and has gameplay value to it.
Do you want to add anything?
No, not really. That was a good answer.
Yeah, I thought so too. So I definitely check mark. Yeah, I mean, I think it'll be really fun to see what everyone thinks when they come and play the game in the summer. There'll be more people getting into the closed beta as we go, so that's really exciting. And if you are looking for friends to play the game too, our forums are always a great place to go for that as well. So check that out when you get into the game, because I'm sure you'll be able to find lots of people who'll be really into it too. If you're really serious about it, you want to find people that are really into having really good beasts and good beast battles and being able to duel people with high level stuff, that'll be a great place to check out. I guess the last thing I wanted to ask before I ask you guys if you had anything you want to add was, what's your favorite? Who's your favorite beast right now? Which one do you like the best? And if you don't remember the exact name, that's okay, because there's a lot of names. I don't know if I remember the exact name of what he is now, but who's your favorite? Brandon, do you have a favorite off the top of your head?
I do. Probably Loop Roar. And then he evolves into Loop Pow.
Oh, okay.
He's awesome. He's like,
he's a badass.
He is. He's just like this red, cat dog, but except with tusks and sharp teeth and
cat dog.
Well, he's just like, fine, not the Nickelodeon cat dog from back in the day, but he's just like, he's got that ferocity that I love, and a lot of his attacks are just like scratches, and I've always wanted to, I like cats, and especially cats. See, the good thing about cats is I know whenever I look at a cat, it wants to hurt me. I love living with that.
Do you see the video that was on the internet today of the little baby in the zebra coat?
Yes.
At the zoo in front of the glass, and the lion's like just desperately trying to get the glass. Wow. And like opening its mouth wide, like trying to eat this baby through the glass. It's like, why do you dress your kid up in a zebra coat and set it in front of a lion?
The best line is
because now you have a viral video.
Yeah, it's true. It's really good. The best part about that video is at the very end, they're like, there's something not right about this. You just hear them say that.
That's hilarious.
But exactly, that's the mentality I have. I just, like, I'm personally for beasts that just make me feel cool. Like, I'm not a cool person, so I gotta make that up by putting cool things around me. So,
compensation.
How about you, gents? Any favorite beast?
I like the P-Rex. Yeah, the Apache. It's loosely named after my son, so I have a special attachment to that one. Like, Apache Petrar P-Rex. Yeah. Like, plus, you know, he's a Tyrannosaurus, so he's, like, inherently cool.
And he shoots lightning.
Yeah, he's a, exactly. He's a lightning Tyrannosaurus.
Historically accurate.
Indeed. Yeah, I'd probably say that Tony's going to kill me for this one, but my favorite is actually Chamopee, which is hilarious.
He's proud of that one.
He's like this little spiny cyclops, like little round blue ball kind of thing. And he looks so awkward, but I just find him so funny really cool looking. And I think the biggest... the biggest thing is I just want to hug him. I think he just looks so huggable.
He's one of the starters, right?
Yeah, he's one of the starters.
He's one of our most alien looking ones. Like, a lot of them have some loose bases on different animals. But yeah, that one's definitely alien.
Yeah, and then actually my favorite bit about that whole family of beasts is that the highest evolution guy has this look on his face where he's got his eye half closed. Yeah. And he just looks like he's just chilling. Like, he's just like, yeah.
Things good.
Yeah, exactly.
I think one thing that's going to be really fun when a lot of people start playing is to see which starter beast people pick, because you have a choice of five at the beginning of the game, and it'll be really fun to kind of see the percentages on who picks what.
Yeah, it's actually really cool to have a stat system where we can track all this kind of stuff.
We will know that at some point.
But yeah, it's also really hard to tune, because like you said, there's so many different choices you can make, and we have to make sure it works. Like, no matter what choice, no matter which pet you picked, we can't have a battle where you just totally get wiped if you pick that pet. So there's that's been a struggle, because
especially with types of pets and various types they're super effective against or not as effective against.
And sometimes they could just do zero damage against certain.
Right, you run up against something where you're immune, your plant creatures trying to attack a water creature, uh-huh. Or maybe it's the other way around. Your water creatures attacking a plant creature. Plant creature's like, yeah, it's water. So good.
Right, yeah.
Yummy.
Set it on fire, kids.
Yeah. So have a backup. You need to learn to carry the backup monster. Cool, guys. Well, I think that's all I have question-wise. And we're going to be doing this more as things progress and certain players get awesome and they experience more of the world. We can talk more about some of the decisions and more about, just the entire game in general. But this is just kind of a first look at Outer Knots today. And we're going to continue with the, closed beta testing and letting more and more people in. There'll be opportunities. Make sure you check out the Outer Knots Facebook page and like that. But before we go, is there anything else you guys wanted to add at this point? Anything you want to say to the fans out there, just in general? Shout out. If not, no big deal either, too.
I'm really excited to hear back from people and hear what they think. Because, like I said, we get to keep on working on this game and making it better every week. And, the more we hear back about what people want to see, the more we can give it back to them.
Just want to say hi, Mom.
Well, Brandon will be around listening for your feedback for sure, as well as the team is also on the forums as well. So make sure you check out the Insomniac Games forums, insomniacgames.com/community. You can also go to the Outer Knots page on Facebook, which is facebook.com/Outer Knots. And there'll be posts there. There's a trailer. If you haven't seen that yet, there will be screenshots. You can leave posts on the wall there if you want, or you can go to the community either way. You can always correspond with us, of course, on the Insomniac Games Facebook page as well, and Insomniac Games on Twitter. And I think that's about wraps it up. You can also always email us, too, if you have something, a question you want to ask, whatever. It's podcast@insomniacgames.com. So I think that's it. Any final words, Brandon Bwin?
No, keep on the lookout for the Facebook stuff. We're going to push out a lot of content to tease you guys.
Tease and satisfy.
There we go. That's a great way to end it.
Talk dirty to me.
Rowan, thanks for coming on the show today. I know you guys are so busy. Brian, you as well. Really, really appreciate having you guys on. And good luck with wrapping up the rest of Closed Beta.
All right, thank you.
Thanks all for having us.
And that is the Full Moon Shiver this week. We will be back sometime soon. So keep subscribing and we'll catch you next time.